Good morning, everyone. I would like to begin today's hearing by acknowledging and welcoming some of the people who live in the area devastated by the coal ash spill in Tennessee. And I know Senator Alexander has just greeted you all extensively, and I had the privilege of meeting some of you in my office yesterday. And I see how this disaster has forever changed your lives. And we hope not forever, but for now, certainly. They're farmers, they're ranchers, nurses, and parents. And I would like to ask Bridget, Melinda, Ron, Teresa, and Terry to please stand and be recognized so people understand what we're talking about here is about real people's lives. Thank you. The beautiful place where they lived was instantly transformed by a wall of ash, water, and debris. They are anxious about the spill's potential effects on health, especially to children, and they're anxious about their livelihoods. They sent me personal statements that I would like to enter into the record, and I will do so if there's no objection at this time. Would also like to take a moment to say that our thoughts go out to all the people affected by this spill. We have two new colleagues who are sitting in on this meeting, Senator Udall, Senator Merkley, and they are headed to this committee once we get the formal committee resolutions done. And I know Senator Inhofe was anxious for me to introduce you, and I think you're going to, as we saw yesterday, be very interested in the work that we do here, and welcome. Let me for a moment describe what happened at 1 a.m. on Monday, December 22, 2008, near the Kingston TVA coal-fired power plant. An earthen wall failed on a 40-acre surface impoundment holding coal ash. More than 1 billion gallons of waste rushed down the valley like a wave, covering more than 300 acres. The volume of ash and water was nearly 100 times greater than the amount of oil spilled in the Exxon Valdez disaster. Let me mention that again. The volume of ash and water was nearly 100 times greater than the amount of oil spilled in the Exxon Valdez disaster. We have an image to show you the scale of this enormous coal spill. It looks like a giant mudslide. And you could just get the sense of the power of that mud. I'd like to show you a few examples of the devastation left behind in the wake of this disaster, what happened to some of the homes. Would you make sure you turn from one side to the other so colleagues can see? Okay. Go ahead. Thank you, Grant. The flow of toxic ash and water impacted 42 parcels of property, destroyed 3 homes, damaged 9 others, covered roads and railroads, harmed fish, and polluted the Emory River. Thankfully, no serious injuries were reported. This disaster happened while the community slept. And yesterday in my meeting, Senators, the good people from the community said that this is what they said. They shuddered to think of what could have happened if the wall had failed on a summer's day when parents and children were playing on the shore, swimming and fishing in boats, because the coves that are the main attraction to the community where the kids play and the fish instantly covered in this horrible polluted mess. Senator Alexander, I look forward to working with you on the recovery efforts. Anything that you need from me, you have. And I will work with my colleagues, and I know they feel the same. Today, I'd like to explore several key questions, including how did this spill happen? What are the impacts? How is the area going to be cleaned up? How do we ensure events like this don't happen again? Now, TVA officials say they're investigating why the dam surrounding the ash collapsed. So far, they've said that heavy rains and freezes may have triggered the disaster, but the Nashville Tennessean reported on January 4th that the same earthen wall had similar blowouts in 03 and 06. The people that I met yesterday said they knew the impoundment had problems. Following the 2003 event, TVA rejected several recommendations for retrofitting the impoundment because they deemed them too costly, with estimates up to $25 million. We must find out why this wall failed, because to clean this up, Senators, makes $25 million just look like pennies. That's going to be the cost of this cleanup. What are the spill's impacts? This depends on what was in the coal waste. I have a jar of the sludge. I asked them to bring it. I'm going to pass it around to everybody. I just want you to take a sense of this, just a tiny little bit of this. I'll give it to enough, and ask the staff if they, one of you would just, while I talk, just pass this around. And what I'd like to do is tell you what's in this coal ash that you'll be taking a look at. We have a chart that shows you this. This is the contaminants that exist in coal ash. And senators, I beg you to take a look at this, because this is why the community is so up in arms. This isn't a harmless mud. Arsenic, beryllium, cadmium, chromium, lead, and mercury. And I need to read to you what we know about these elements. Arsenic, cancer of the lungs, bladder, skin, liver, kidneys, harms the liver, kidneys, and cardiovascular system. Beryllium, cancer of the lungs, harms the respiratory and immune system. Cadmium, cancer of the lungs, harms the liver, kidneys, and bones. Chromium, cancer of the lungs, harms the liver and kidneys and circulatory and nervous systems. Lead, harms the nervous system, especially in children and reproductive and developmental systems. And some of the people who visited me talked about the pregnant women who live in this area. Mercury harms the nervous system, especially in children, impairs thinking, language, and motor skills. So that's what's in this. And the irony of all this, thank you, Grant, is that the reason we have this waste, there's a good reason why we have it. We want to get that waste out of the air. And that's why we have these ponds. So the huge irony here is, under the Clean Air Act, we are keeping this out of the air because it's dangerous, and now it's spilled. So that's what you have to think about. We worked hard and long, and so did TVA, to get those elements out of the air and keep it safe, and this is what has happened. At the spill site, the US EPA has found river water with arsenic, and I mention all of these elements. These pollutants. The longer this ash stays on the ground, and this is another point, the more it can dry out and blow around. Some of the heavy metals in ash can harm people when inhaled. We have to get a complete picture of contaminants in different parts of the coal spill. Some types of coal have more contaminants than others, and TVA used this impoundment to hold coal that was combusted over a number of years. Different kinds of coal. So it's not just a one-size-fits-all analysis here. Hot spots of contamination could be buried just beneath the surface of the spill. And this raises another important question. How is this disaster going to be cleaned up? How is this area going to be restored? Seeding the ground with grass, which is what TVA has said thus far, maybe today they'll have another solution, is not a permanent solution. A cleanup can be done right, or it can be a ticking time bomb. This area must be cleaned up to address the potential long-term threats of the families who live there. And we must ensure that this type of disaster doesn't happen again. We need to have standards in place to make sure that coal ash is managed and disposed of properly, including the use of dry storage rather than wet storage, which the Kingston plant used. Over 130 million tons of coal combustion waste is produced in the U.S. every year. This is the equivalent of a train of boxcars stretching from Washington, D.C. to Melbourne, Australia. An 07 EPA report found 67 ash impoundments on landfills in 23 states that have caused or were suspected of causing contamination, including to ground and surface waters. EPA knew of dozens of other sites but lacked sufficient information to single out the cause. For three decades, EPA has been looking at the issue of how to regulate combustion waste. The federal government has the power to regulate these wastes, and inaction has allowed this enormous volume of toxic material to go largely unregulated. State efforts are very inconsistent, and as more and more toxic material is removed from coal combustion, it's critically important that protective standards for coal ash waste be established. And I intend to ask Lisa Jackson, our EPA nominee, about her feelings on this matter. And I do intend to work with all of my colleagues on this committee and in the Senate, cross party aisles, and with the incoming administration to ensure that necessary action is taken to protect our public health and the environment. The disaster in Tennessee proves the point that we can't avoid the cost associated with managing coal ash. It is far better to invest in preventing disasters like this than spending more to clean them up. And the last thing I want to show you is the mission statement of the TVA. And I want to read part of the mission statement. The Tennessee Valley Authority's authorizing statute provides that the TVA's mission includes, quote, being a national leader in technological innovation, low-cost power, and environmental stewardship. Now, I just want to put my own mea culpa out here. We didn't really do much in the first 2 years I held this gavel on looking at TVA. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I should have. I assumed a lot that I shouldn't have assumed. Well, that day is over. We're going to work with TVA. We're going to make sure it lives up to this. Low-cost power, I would add, environmental stewardship means alternative ways of getting power. We're going to work together. It's going to be a good relationship. But I have to say, I assume too much about their environmental stewardship, and I really do apologize about it. We had a lot of oversight. That was one area I didn't pick up on. So I want to thank again everybody who's here. I really want to thank TVA for coming, the community for coming, and we're going to have an excellent hearing, and I'll turn it over now to Senator Inhofe.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, they a far greater significance. I think everyone here should know that a great event happened last night. Senator Boxer had her third grandchild. I have 12, so you've got a target out there. I want to welcome Senator Udall and Merkley, both here. I've heard so many good things about you. I'm anxious to get to know you better. And I think your Western influence on this committee will be very helpful too. So because there are a lot of huge issues that are out there. I probably am not going to be here for the whole hearing, Madam Chairman, because I know that Senator Alexander and Senator Isaacson are geographically a little closer to some of these things that we'll be talking about during the course of this hearing than I am from Oklahoma. I want to welcome you, Mr. Kilgore, and also Bill Sansom. Back when Republicans were relevant, I was the chairman of this committee. When we confirmed Bill, and at that time, I think I commented, you probably have the best credentials of anyone who was ever confirmed in that position. I agree that with the chairman that what happened at Kingston was a tragedy, plain and simple. It was just the magnitude is great, and I think those slides that you showed demonstrate that very clearly. And we don't yet know the cause of the failure of the retaining wall that released over a billion gallons of coal combustion waste sludge into the surrounding area, including the Emory River, as I understand it. And thankfully, there were no injuries, but three homes were rendered in uninhabitable. And I want to say to the five victims who are here today that there isn't anyone up here that isn't totally in sympathy with you and wanting to do everything we can to preclude something like this from happening again. And so we just want to wish you the very best for the future and see how much help we can be to getting your lives back to normalcy. I want to make sure that the people are taken care of, and I think we all feel that way. I think to the extent the incident has caused harm to public health and the environment, the TVA is committed to take the necessary steps to address these problems, and we'll hear about that today. It's essential that TVA remains committed to this community long after the media has packed up and left town. I'm pleased the results of air, water, and soil testing meet EPA standards. I hope, Mr. Kilgore, that you elaborate on these and planned future testing as you deliberate your remarks. In light of this, as would be expected, the certain extremist groups are exploiting this incident to further their own political objectives, namely to eradicate the use of coal in this country. It's we go through this all the time in this committee, and I would hope that we would just concentrate on the two things that are important, that is taking care of the victims and trying to preclude something like this from happening again. Coal is absolutely necessary to keep this machine called America running. Right now we're 53% dependent upon coal, and so I know there are those who want to use any tragedy for their own political purposes. So let's hope that doesn't happen. I look forward to this hearing, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Lautenberg.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, and welcome to our friend from the TVA, very important agency. One of the things that happens here with a new Congress, I can tell you now with the strong representation that is in the majority, that environment is a major issue for us. That we heard here yesterday that global warming is threatening the lives, and these aren't lives in 100 years from now or 200 years from now. These are, I was pleased to know that Barbara Boxer, who's a dear friend, was blessed with a third grandchild, and though Senator Inhofe and I are friends, I want him to know that I have 11 grandchildren.
Probably still working on it.
I'm begging, I can say. But the thing that happened is that this spill, this ugly material, was allowed to cover areas of residents and community, that we wind up, though this spill was nearly 50 times bigger than the Exxon Valdez oil spill. I was up there very shortly after the ship went aground and saw the devastation that was rendered, and can't imagine what something that's 50 times larger is like. We heard from our chairman about the what happened to the houses as this material seeped into the Tennessee River. And when families, I noted one of the pictures had a Christmas wreath on the front of the house. And that's when people usually enjoy life at a very high point, families in particular. And to see it with that threatening material almost on the front porch is certainly not a sight that any of us like to see. And the thing that shocks me, I've got to tell you, the TVA charge of this facility should have been alarmed, and I'm sure they were, but their reaction was that coal ash is not harmful. And here I quote a spokesman there, it does have some heavy metals within it, but it's not toxic or anything. Well, how would you feel about it if it's your child who breathed some of that dust or that it penetrated your house walls? Not very, very good. And I'm not suggesting that TVA doesn't care, but the fact that anyone can make a statement like that when the plaques that the chairman had held up here shows the various elements that are in that ash. They're some of the most threatening things to life and health that you can find. Arsenic, lead, and others. Terrible. We fight like the devil. And I come from a very crowded state, New Jersey. And boy, these chemicals are chased down like the most ruthless bandits. So we hope that the EPA and TVA can coordinate their efforts better, because I think EPA initially also said that some of the testing showed that while there were some heavy metals in there, that it wasn't something to really be alarmed about. We challenge that view, and we want to hear from EPA, which we'll do, and ask that TVA and EPA get the story straight and make sure that what we hear is what is developed as a result of serious study and investigation. And I thank you, Madam Chairman, for calling this hearing. It's a very, very important issue.
Thank you. I want to place in the record three documents here because Senator Inhofe said that the tests looked like that the standards were being kept. Now, these are EPA samples. The first one, the EPA test results of the sediment showed levels of arsenic, natrium, I'm not saying it right, exceeded cleanup goals. That's one. And the second, which it goes on for two pages, and everyone is willing, I'm happy to pass these around. The surface water in the Emory River, arsenic and other heavy metals violated safe drinking water standards. Now, that's not in the drinking water at this time, but this is the danger and why we need to do a cleanup here so they don't get in. And some of those heavy metals are, in addition to arsenic, beryllium, cadmium, chromium, lead, and thallium. So I'm going to place these in the record so the record is clear. The testing is not showing that everything is gold in any way, shape, or form. These are serious problems. Senator Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and congratulations on your latest grandchild. And welcome to Senator Udall, who I had the privilege of serving with in the House, and Senator Merkley. We're glad to have you on the committee as well. I'd like to thank Lamar Alexander for calling together the TVA caucus to meet with TVA and to meet with, and for the first time for me, to be able to see those who were damaged by this spill. And I'd like to welcome, although I know welcome is probably not an appropriate word to use for an incident like this, but Tom Kilgore is a terrific public servant. I think the committee needs to remember that it was 2005 that this committee and the Congress reorganized the governance of TVA to a working board of directors and a CEO. It previously was a three-member committee, if I'm not mistaken, that pretty much ran TVA up until 2005, if I'm not mistaken. So Tom has come on. He used to be in Georgia. He's an outstanding business person, and from the conversation we had earlier today with the other members, I want to applaud his early actions in this tragedy. As a Georgian and as a TVA state, I'm extremely interested in this because we have 10 such retention areas in our state, although none of them are TVA retention areas. There are other utilities that operate within the state. And although this is a tragedy of immense proportion, it is also a chance for us to learn and see to it that it never happens again. And I'm delighted that a person of Tom's stature and ability is there, because I know one of his goals is not just to clean up, to see to it that the citizens are protected and restored and reimbursed and made whole, but also to see to that this doesn't happen anywhere else again in the United States of America. So, Tom, I appreciate your commitment to that. And as a representative of the people of Georgia, where 10 such retention areas reside, I'm going to work very closely with you to make sure we provide that information to other utilities so we do prevent this from happening anywhere else in the United States, most appropriately anywhere else in Georgia. So thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you so much, Senator. Senator Merkley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It is clear from the pictures and the statistics, the scope of the current disaster. I'm struck by the numbers of 45,000 pounds of arsenic, more than 1 million pounds of barium, 91,000 pounds of chromium, and that the immediate cleanup is so important, given both the concern about immediate contamination of water and the dry dust down the road. But I'm also very interested in thoughts on how we monitor and regulate the 1,300 some other similar sites around this country to avoid these such a disaster in the future. Thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you, Senator Alexander.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. Thank you for having this hearing, calling attention to this. I think we're unanimous that what should happen, the TVA should clean up this mess, make whole the people who were hurt, clean it up quickly, and do everything possible to make sure it doesn't happen again in the TVA region, and we should help make sure it doesn't happen anywhere else. But I want to take a long-term view. I hope my contribution can be a long-term view in two ways. First, to those who are hurt. We visited for a little while this morning in my office, and among the several things that were said,
is that they hoped that I'd stay interested after the media left and after the country went on to another issue. And I will do that. And I think all of us have a responsibility to do that. And I will work with Governor Bredesen, who's been on the site. I'll work with Mr. Kilgore and with this committee to make sure that this doesn't get lost in the shuffle, that we set clear goals, that we imagine what we want Roane County to be 5 years from now. We want it to be a place where people are happy to live, where children play, where the water's clean. I live not far from there myself, and I know how beautiful it is, and we want that to be our goal. That's a long-term goal that involves each of you on the front row and everybody in Roane County. I'll pledge myself to that. The second thing I'd like to do, and I would enjoy working with Senator Boxer on this or others, is turn a short-term regulatory and management failure into a long-term technology development story. I mean, what we really need here, and I suggested this in an address at the Oak Ridge Laboratory in the spring, is a series of mini Manhattan projects on how we can safely and cleanly use coal in this country to make electricity for however long we need to do that, whether it's 20 or 25 years while we move to different kinds of energy, or whether it's a longer period of time. Today, for example, Tennessee gets 60% of its electricity from coal. And that's very important to us. I mean, when I was governor, I used to recruit Saturn and Nissan, and I know Governor Bredesen has recruited Volkswagen, and more recently, one of the largest new plants to make the material that will create solar cells. I don't exactly have the name of it here, but it's in Clarksville, Tennessee, a $1.2 billion investment. What is the name of that? Polysilicon is the material. And the interesting part about it is it takes a substation for electricity of 128 megawatts. In other words, if we hadn't had TVA's coal-burning capacity, we wouldn't be able to make the material that we hope will create the solar energy. So what I would like for us to do is to look at each of the elements of coal burning for electricity that creates an environmental problem for us and get on a fast track, I say mini Manhattan Project, to solve the problem. The National Academy of Engineering has suggested that be done in terms of recapture of carbon, either from sequestration or in some other form. Another way to do it would be to make solar power equally competitive with fossil fuels, as they're doing in the plant in Clarksville. Obviously, we need to find better ways to deal with soda ash. With coal ash. I've put in legislation a little different from the legislation that Senator Boxer proposed, but still it was to require, Senator Carper and I did, that we have strict controls on mercury, on nitrogen, on sulfur, and on carbon. So if we as a committee made a massive effort over the next 5 years to be able to turn this environmental tragedy into a technology success story, then maybe at the end of 5 years we could burn coal in a clean way, and it may force us from conventional coal plants into a second generation of coal plants once we find out what the true cost of burning coal in conventional plants is. So my commitment's long term, first to the victims and second to the technology, and I look forward to working with the chairman in that, and thank you for the time.
Well, Senator, thank you for your statement. It's very heartening to me. Senator Udall, and then followed by Senator Carper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And let me thank the other members of the committee for the ranking member, for the very kind, welcoming comments. I did serve with Senator Isaacson over in the House, and I look forward to a good relationship with all of you. To the victims, this is something that we see in the West, these kinds of disasters in a variety of different areas, and I want to commit, like Senator Alexander did, to make sure that the victims are made whole on this. That is very important. I also believe that we need to look at the bigger picture, Senator Alexander, in terms of the costs and whether or not we should be regulating more here or less. That's I think, a very important part of this debate. You know, the EPA has been looking at a number of situations on regulating this type of waste, and they haven't done so. Apparently, it's the cost, is my understanding in the articles. The reason they haven't regulated is because of the cost. And so when we look at all the energy that's out there, we have to look at what are the full costs, what are the externalities. Here we're creating huge dumps of coal ash waste that aren't really paid for, that aren't worked into the system. And I think it's tremendously important that when we look at the cost of coal or renewable energy or nuclear, we look at the full costs that are out there, because we see that those costs are big and significant, and they add to that picture. So I hope as we move down the road that we take our regulatory responsibilities seriously and make sure that the TVA is doing its job. They say their mission is environmental stewardship. In this case, that stewardship has not been very good. And I hope we look at the full costs here in terms of all of our energy sources, because I think that will guide us into the future as to where we need to go. And I thank you and look forward to hearing from both of our panels today.
Senator, you're so right on the costs, and we have to factor in the cost of this type of spill, too.
That's right. That's right.
Senator Carper.
Chairman Boxer, thank you for bringing us together today as promptly as you have on the heels of this tragedy. To my new colleagues, Tom and Jeff, we're delighted that you're here and very pleased that you've chosen to serve on this committee. I think that's great for us and for your states and for our country. For our friends from Tennessee who are here today, in the New Testament, there's a parable about the Good Samaritan, and the question that is answered in the story of the Good Samaritan: who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? You are our neighbors. Whether you happen to be from Oregon or from New Mexico or California or Tennessee or Georgia or Delaware, you are our neighbors. And we're going to try to do our best to make sure that you are treated fairly going forward. Mr. Kilgore, I don't know you. I've met you before, but I don't know you well. Whenever Johnny Isaacson speaks as highly as someone as he has of you, I listen to that. I have a lot of respect for him and for his judgment. If he says that you're that good a person, then I generally take that to the bank. TVA needs a very good person. He's a very strong leader. And some of my colleagues have heard me say any number of times that particularly when we're holding hearings of the subcommittee that I lead along with Senator George Voinovich in the past, subcommittee that deals with clean air and with nuclear safety. And I won't say that I lecture the nuclear industry, but I say to them often, everything that I do, I can do better. I think that's true for all of us. When I was governor of my state, I used to tell my cabinet secretaries, if it isn't perfect, whatever operation they were talking about in their office, in their department, if it isn't perfect, make it better. And you've got a big operation to run. And clearly, some things aren't perfect. We're here today to focus largely on the tragedy that's brought these folks on the front row to our hearing. But as Senator Box and others have suggested, TVA ought to be a role model for us. You should be the gold standard. And in too many ways, you're not. That's not your fault. You haven't been the leader of this company forever. It's a federal corporation, and because it's a federal corporation, we think you need to adhere to a higher standard than others. We, as elected officials, we're expected to adhere to higher standards, personal behavior and so forth, and similar kind of performance level should be, I think, our standard should be set for TVA. Within the subcommittee that I am privileged to chair, have been privileged to chair, TVA is one of any number of issues, items for us to hold jurisdiction over. And I just want you to know, and I say this not in a threatening way, but just in a very forthright way, we're going to be looking closely at what you're doing, and the leadership that you're providing, and the direction that you're taking, not just with respect to this instant problem, but with the bigger issues. I thought Senator Alexander spoke very well. He usually does, almost always does, and except when he can't remember the word, was it fluoro? silicon. That's the only time I've ever heard him hesitate in 6 years or whatever it's been. But I thought he spoke very well. We want you to be the leader. We want you to be the leader in figuring out how do we deal with the sequestration of CO2. We want you to be the leader in helping us to find ways to reduce SOx, NOx, and mercury discharges and to meet an aggressive schedule. We want you to be the leader in terms of identifying alternative forms of energy and supporting that. We want you to be the leader in terms of helping the folks that are using your electricity to be able to be smarter consumers, whether it's a smart grid or smart metering. We want you to be the leader in all those respects. So we welcome you here today. We look forward to hearing your testimony and look forward to having the opportunity to ask questions of you. And Madam Chairman, I have a statement for the record that I'd like to append to what I've just said. Thank you very much.
And what we're going to do is go to, we have two panels. This Mr. Kilgore is the only one on this first panel. I'd like to give you about 8 minutes. If you need to go over, that's fine, to 10, but no more than that. And then we'll have our second panel who will also have a similar rule. So go right ahead, Mr. Kilgore.
Chairman Boxer and Ranking Member Inhofe, Senator Alexander, Senator Isaacson, and other members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity for letting me appear and discuss our ongoing work about recovery and cleanup of the release of ash at one of TVA's power plant sites. The release, as has been noted, followed a failure of a retention wall for coal ash that was at our Kingston fossil plant in East Tennessee. We are focused on cleaning up the release and setting right the things for the people of the Kingston community. And that's our first focus. We've said we'll clean it up, and we start with people first, and the environment comes right after that. I want to assure you that TVA will do a first-rate job of correcting the problem caused for the spill. Let me give you just a few minutes of chronology. When I was first notified about this spill shortly after midnight on December the 22nd, I, of course, got up and I was at the site about 45 minutes later, and the initial response by the Roane County folks who are here in the room, Howie Rose, the emergency management personnel, and the county executive there, was tremendous. The only good news I had in that whole week was when Howie came in about 5 o'clock and told me that everybody was accounted for and there were no serious injury. We'll always be grateful for their prompt and professional response. And of course, our first concern was for the safety of our neighbors in the area. It was that good news that there were no injuries requiring medical attention. Our first priority was to reach out to the people immediately impacted, especially to the three families who lost their homes. We then assigned teams of employees and retirees to be the points of contact for every affected family. In the Kingston community, we've opened an outreach center that's open 7 days a week for anyone with property damage, a claim, or a question, or a concern. And our executives are out there regularly. Our CFO was out there yesterday, our senior executives. On the operations side, we began work that day to place barriers to minimize the movement of ash and begin the cleanup. We're using the National Incident Management System approach, and a number of federal, state, and local agencies are on site sharing information and monitoring our work. These agencies are also conducting their own water, air, soil testing, and sharing their findings, and we fully realize that if there is a difference, that EPA and the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, their results trump ours. If there is a difference, they are the ones that have the official data. These agencies are also sampling the results for drinking water, and it shows that the municipal water in the area continues to be safe. Mobile air testing showed that particulate levels in the area are far below applicable standards. That's good. That doesn't mean that we can't rest. We have to keep it that way. While the ash material deposited off-site is not classified as a hazardous waste under the standards of the Environmental Protection Agency, it is meant to be contained, and I don't want to minimize that. We are working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to clean this up. It is an important recovery phase for the impacted areas of about 275 acres. We're working on an independent analysis of the cause and the long-term plan for full recovery and restoration. And we've tried to do this. We tried to focus on outreach to the community, containment, recovery, and prevention. We have, like Senator Isaacson mentioned, we also have other dikes. They're not like this, but we're inspecting those to make sure that we don't have problems there. As you know, TVA is a corporate agency of the United States, the nation's largest public power provider, working with 158 local power distributors. TVA is funded by the ratepayers and receives no appropriations. To supply electricity to our region, TVA uses a mix of generating sources. About half of our nation's electricity is generated from coal, and TVA has a similar situation. While we are working to increase our renewable and carbon-free generation, about 60% of TVA's generation this year will be from coal. And like utilities around the nation, we must manage the ash that is a byproduct of that coal-fired power production. TVA has been a part of the Kingston community since the plant was built in the 1950s. It is our intent to stay there and finish the job of cleaning us up and do it right. The Kingston plant was built in accordance with congressional authorization, primarily to meet the defense needs of the nation at the time. Specifically, Kingston met the need to provide power for the production of atomic defense materials at Oak Ridge, Tennessee. The 300 TVA employees who live and work in the area care deeply about their community, as I do and as we all do. And as I said at the beginning of my comments, we will do a first-rate job of correcting the problems caused by the spill. It is not a time when we hold our head high, but it is a time when we will look our neighbors in the eye and say we will stay on the job until it's finished. We're going to do this and do it right. Thank you, and I look forward to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kilgore, a January 2008 dike stability report for the Kingston plant states that impoundment walls failed in 03 and 06 due to, quote, excessive seepage, unquote. Walls on the same impoundment failed in December and caused this disaster. A January 4th Tennessean article found that TVA chose a cheap fix to those earlier problems that I cited and states that TVA has known about, quote, some seeps along the toe of the dike since the early 80s. Knowing what you know now, do we have that article? We're going to put that article into the record from the Tennessean. Knowing what you know now, would you have taken some different steps than you took?
Madam Chairwoman, I don't know that until we finish the failure investigation. Obviously, those things concern me. Some of them I've reviewed very hastily while we're trying to reach out to the community. We had outside experts look at that. What I'm interested in finding out is whether or not the mechanism was the same and whether the location. Those locations were on the west side of the dike. It appears to me, just from a layman's standpoint, that the dike went north, and so the location appears to be different. We had outside experts help us with those fixes. The most expensive solution wasn't chosen. Obviously, that looks bad for us. I would like to get the failure investigation complete and know exactly what the cause
was. Okay. Well, let me just simply respond to your answer.
Yes.
If I was sitting there and somebody said, do you wish you'd have done more to stop this, I would say yes. Let me go on. Mr. Kilgore, TVA's Kingston Power Plant has been one of the top 100 polluting facilities in the nation in four of the last 5 years, according to the Federal Toxic Release Inventory data. From 02 to 06, Kingston released over 37 million pounds of toxic pollution. And the size of this spill, I understand it. Am I right in saying it's more than a billion gallons? Is that correct?
You could measure it that way. We measure it in cubic yards because this is mostly solid material.
Well, what if I did it in gallons? It's
if
over
you did
a billion
it in gallons,
gallons,
that would
is
be
it not?
Approximately correct.
Okay. Because when you look back in the 70s when there was a terrible breach of a dam in West Virginia, that was a very small number of gallons. It was nowhere near this. A lot of people got killed in that one. And we are so, as you say, fortunate in this particular case in terms of time, time frame. But the point is, given the facility's high volume of waste, do you agree it makes sense to invest in strong waste management practices, including protections like those administered by EPA at ordinary landfills, which I might say do not have this level of toxic waste in it?
Yes, ma'am. We are in the process of investing hundreds of millions of dollars to put scrubbers on this plant, in reference to your plant, your comments about cleaning it up. That is to put scrubbers on the plant.
Well, that's air pollution.
That is air pollution.
I'm talking about the way, I mean, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And we all applaud that, and we want you to do that. But that even gets us more waste, more ash. So where I'm asking you about the safe disposal of the ash. And I'm saying to you, would you think it would make sense to do the type of protection that you have in an ordinary landfill that doesn't even have as much
As we go forward toxic. To clean this up, I'm sure we'll look at that option, every option. We've looked at several options to clean this up.
Okay.
We don't anticipate going back with that same
good.
Design.
Well, let me make a suggestion. And I think that Tom Carper really picked up on it, and I want to thank him. And I'm so proud that he's going to have the subcommittee, because we're going to work with you in the future. It seems to me that TVA ought to be a leader here. It may be that eventually we all decide on a bipartisan way, or maybe it splits across regions, we don't know, that we should control this waste the way we do other waste, that it should have a line, or that it should be safer to protect the constituents of our people who have the coal plants. And I'd like to say to Senator Inhofe, I don't know one senator who said that we're not interested in moving toward cleaner coal. Everyone I know, including myself, we want to see clean coal and safe coal, just like we want to see safe nuclear energy. All the rest, we need it all. It's got to be safe. So I think that's what we're really after. So what we'd like to see, at least some of us here, maybe all of us here, is for TVA to step out, be a little bold, say, you know what, we are a quasi-governmental authority here. We want to be the leader. So before we pass some more, maybe we won't, but we might say from now on, we want those rules in place that are the same rules at a hazardous waste site. Wouldn't it be great if TVA were to take these steps, if you felt it was warranted? So I just ask you that. And then my last question on this round, I want to ask about problems at other storage facilities that you have. First of all, how many storage ponds do you have in the whole system?
We have 11 coal plants, 5 have dry ash collection, and 6 have wet. So outside of Kingston, we would have 5 dry and 5 wet.
And how many ponds, wet ponds do you have?
We would have 6.
So because I know in this plant you have several folding ponds. It's not
yes, ma'am.
Just one pond.
That's correct.
So you have 6 others, including
6 locations.
Everything. No, I'm not asking that.
I know.
How many ponds, holding ponds?
I don't have that information.
Give me a sense of it. Is it 100? Is it 40? Is it
It would
1,000?
Be 2 or 3 per site. So 6,
okay.
I would guess about 20 probably.
Okay, about 20. Has TVA had potential problems or wall failures at impoundments and other facilities?
We have not, to my knowledge. We are looking at those. We have an independent investigator looking at those, we have had since this occurred. We have one or two other places that concern us, because we have a wet spot on the dike, and those are getting our attention
Good.
Right now.
Would you please provide a list to Senator Carper's subcommittee and to the full committee of all potential or known weaknesses at other impoundment or landfills, and the steps you're have taken or will take to address these potential problems?
I'll be glad to.
Thank you, Mr. Kilgore.
And could I say that
yes.
We'll be glad to work with you in becoming Good. A leader at the in the disposal of this.
Well, that's music to our ears, and we're so appreciative. Thank you. Senator Inhofe.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The witness in the next panel, the Southern Alliance of Clean Energy, has in their written statement has asserted that you had prior knowledge of needed repairs to the ash containment pond at the facility, yet did nothing to about that. Now, it's my understanding that you do this this investigation once a year, but the state does it every on a quarterly basis.
That's correct.
So the question I would ask you is, either in the state's quarterly reports or in the last, I don't know when the last one, the annual inspection was by you, what those results were.
Those results were not abnormal. In either case, I've looked at both the state reports and our reports. You know, we've looked further back at engineering studies. We had outside engineering studies done on these repairs that were referenced earlier in 2003. So we did not rely on just internal expertise in that. We went outside and hired experts to give us advice on how to repair those leaks at the time.
Okay. The a lot of environmental organizations, perhaps including the Southern Alliance, that will be on the next panel, have called for coal combustion waste to be listed as hazardous waste under the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, RCRA. What would be the your feeling about the results of that, and is that good advice, or what kind of, how do you see that?
Well, I'm sure with this event that this will get a lot of attention, and we look forward, frankly, to following the lead of Congress and EPA at doing whatever is necessary to make sure something like this does not happen again.
In the opening remarks, several of them said, several members, and I think I did too, that when something like this happens, and all the focus is here, we're having a hearing today, the media is here, the victims are here, that once all that goes away, that you kind of forget about. There's a propensity to just forget about that and get on to other things. How are you going to assure us that that won't happen in your case?
Well, for one thing, we are a member of the community. We've got 300 employees. We've got some that live in the immediate area. And we've been there since 1955, actually, before then when we started construction. It's only in our best interest, as it is in the counties and everybody else, to do this right and stay until the job's done, until the county says to TVA, okay, you've cleaned this up as we've requested.
Yeah, and that stands to reason. It's just that I want to be sure to get that on the record here so that we will not be facing that perhaps in the future. There's one thing, and I'd ask you, Madam Chairman, if it's all right to do this. Since I won't be here to ask questions in the next panel, I'd like to ask one of the witnesses to perhaps include this in his opening in his statement, and that is the witness for the, I guess, Mr. Smith, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I understand they're considering a lawsuit, and what I'd like to have and to get a commitment, if we can get a commitment from them, that if they have an award from a lawsuit or if they have a settlement, that the proceeds would go toward mediating and addressing this problem and not for some other cause. In other words, to the victims of the spill, habitat restoration, and those things that would be directly related to this. I'd like to ask them if they would address this in their opening remarks. And I see a nod back there.
I will give the witness an extra minute or two to respond to that.
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Udall?
Now, my understanding when we talk about whether we list it under RCRA is that we're dealing with hazardous substances here. In 1 year, would this be correct? In the toxic release inventory, TVE showed in 1 year at this plant that the dredge cells contained 45,000 pounds of arsenic, 49,000 pounds of lead, 1.4 million pounds of barium, 91,000 pounds of chromium, and 140,000 pounds of manganese. And these are metals that can cause cancer, liver damage, neurological complications, among other health problems, and that these have been accumulating for decades in these ponds and pools and sites. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And is your position, Ben, that these should be included as toxic hazardous substances? Have you taken a position on this in the past?
No, Senator, we've tried to keep these contained as we're supposed to and follow our permits. We thought this containment was a viable containment. We had no reason to believe that it wouldn't hold this. These metals and arsenic that you refer to are concentrated in the burning of coal. They're out there in a lot of substances. You know, they are elements, and we concentrate them as we burn, and they are in this flash.
And so what eventually is going to happen with these substances? What is your plan you have right now to deal with these thousands and thousands of pounds of toxic substances and hazardous substances. What your plan is, just to keep accumulating them and then just to hope that it goes away, or what? I don't understand where you're headed here. Okay. I mean, if we're trying to look at it at a sustainable operation, where are you headed with this? Is this that you're going to accumulate it, and then what happens to it?
Much of this fly ash is actually sold, and I don't want, you know, what happens there when we burn the coal, it consolidates these materials. But when you use it in concrete or in soil stabilizers and things like that, you actually spread this back out to where it's about natural background again. So we sell about 50% of our fly ash for use in things like concrete, road stabilization, and things like that. That's a beneficial use. It spreads all of those elements back out, similar to what they are in the natural soils. For these wet cells, we eventually would dry them out, cap them, and plant grass and have just a containment.
And your regulator now is the EPA, or is it the state?
It's the state as delegated by EPA.
Does the state have specific regulations dealing with each one of these substances?
They have a regulation dealing with our containments, yes.
For arsenic, for manganese, for
water quality,
cadmium, all of
yes.
Isn't it true that around these sites that we're seeing the pollution of wells?
I haven't seen that. All the wells that I've heard tested so far have all come back good.
Well, the EPA in statements to the press has said that frequently we're seeing more pollution, maybe not in these particular sites, but in these kinds of sites where you accumulate this much in terms of materials, that eventually it does get into the groundwater. But you're monitoring all of these sites, and you believe there's no evidence of pollution of groundwater at this point.
For this site, I have no evidence that the wells are being contaminated. That is one of the concerns, is whether this material leaches out the bottom.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Madam Chair.
I'm going to put in the record a couple of charts, Tom, Senator, to back up what you said. Not at TVA sites, but we'll have these printed up for you. But coal ash contaminates groundwater across the country, and we have listed here from Indiana, Michigan, North Dakota, New York, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, South Carolina, Virginia, where you are right. This is where it's at. So this is an issue that we need to look at, because, you know, again, I would quote from Thomas Friedman, sometimes we have a real problem that is masquerading as an insoluble problem. This isn't insoluble. We can fix this if we have better controls over it. But I think your points are really illustrated. You're not making it up. This is where it's happening.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Isaacson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On that question about groundwater, who issues or the standards for the construction of these ponds? Is it the Tennessee EPA or the
Tennessee Department
but
of
federal
Department
regulations?
Of
and yeah. They do the inspection. Do they? You have leachate collectors under these ponds, or are they more of a dammed lake?
They're a normal ash sediment. They're not lined, if that's what you're asking.
That's what I was asking. I understand 14 years ago there was a similar spill, although smaller, in Pennsylvania. Were there investigations of environmental damage there? And if there were, was there any finding of extensive damage or life-threatening damage from that spill?
I've read that briefly, and I have had staff in touch with those folks, and it's my understanding that that was successfully cleaned up. It took some period of time, but that it was successfully cleaned up. The failure mechanism was not the same as what we saw here. It was a failure of a stop log, I think, that held the dike at one point.
The chairman was talking about overseeding and strawing the immediate area temporarily, but I think I heard you say that you're going to remove, you're going to have all the heavy equipment, yellow equipment, which I guess means Caterpillar. You're going to eventually take all this out, right?
Our first objective is to get the river. That will be dredge the river and get that out, and then we'll move successfully back onto our site. Our first objective is get it all back on our property. Out of that 275 acres, about 50 acres of it's private property. We need to get it back on our property, and then we can successively work it back and either take it off site, store it in, there are some fabrics that are made that actually filter this so that it dewaters naturally and turns into a more solid material, and there's other ways to dewater this, but we're looking at all those options.
Well, when you sell the fly ash primarily to concrete producers, I understand, how do you, in what form do you sell it, wet or dry?
It's usually, I would call it damp. It's not wet like this. It's dry fly ash. We keep it slightly damp so that it doesn't dust.
So we would call it dry. Is that delivered by rail or?
Usually by truck. Could be by rail, but usually sold by truck.
Is there any other use for fly ash or market for fly ash beyond concrete?
Yes, it's a good soil filler. It's used in various things. The cenospheres that we're collecting off the river, and I think we've collected several tons of those, are actually used in manufacture of such things as bowling balls and things like that. They're a filler material.
The elements that were on the chart, beryllium, chromium, arsenic, those are all naturally occurring elements that become hazardous in larger concentrations than naturally occurring. Is that correct?
That's correct. We obviously don't invent these elements. They are elements in nature. We do concentrate them as we burn the coal.
And if I heard you right, by selling it and using it in concrete, it deconcentrates the elements back to a level of natural occurring. Is that correct?
You spread it back out. When you sell it, it goes back to normal background levels as you spread it back up.
Okay, my last question. You have 5 dry facilities and 6 wet, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
In your experience, what made the difference in one site you did it wet and one site you did it dry?
I don't know the TVA history there. My experience is that the wet facilities were the older facilities because as you collected this from the electrostatic precipitators that were put on in the 60s and 70s. The way you got the ash away from the plant was to basically sluice it out to a pond that kept it wet, kept the dusting down, which was what we were all worried about. And so the older facilities are generally wet, and probably the newer ones are dry.
But either one can be approved by EPA, is that correct?
That's correct.
Currently?
Yes.
And lastly, I just reiterate what I said in my remarks.
Did you mean EPA federal or state?
Well, the states enforce federal standards.
We don't have any standards.
We don't have any.
We do not. That's why I wanted to. Please go on. I'll give you another minute.
No.
I just wanted to make sure you knew.
I appreciate that.
We have no federal standards for the disposal of this.
And just lastly, I want to repeat what I said earlier. You served us in Georgia, and I appreciate the service you gave us in utility industry, and since we have 10 facilities in our state, I am very interested in seeing to it that we learn from this experience so that the standards in place prevent this from happening again. But I appreciate your stewardship and your being here today. Thank you.
Senator, thank you. Senator Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Kilgore, I wanted to ask you a couple things related to this. One is that a TVA spokesman had said that the piles of ash at the pond were 60 feet above the water. Is that an unusual practice, or does it exceed any expected standard, or does it add to the loading that would create greater pressure against the dike, or is that a factor in any way in this disaster?
It could be. I will say this is the only facility we have that is like that, where it has a ring dike above ground. Most of the rest of them are below ground ponds, so to speak. The ash dike was about 60 feet above the road, and it had about probably a foot of water on top of it in terms of the ash and then water on top to keep the dust down.
My understanding of this statement was that the ash was 60 feet above the water.
That would be above the river level, yes.
I see. Thank you. Second, that in terms of the contamination of groundwater, I believe I understood you to say that has not been an issue in the TVA sites in general?
It has not.
Okay, I just want to draw your attention to an EPA report from 2007, which identified 63 sites in 26 states where water was contaminated by heavy metals from dumps, including 3 Tennessee Valley Authority dumps. I don't have the details of that report in front of me, but I think it'd be worth checking.
I'll go back and look at that. Thank you.
The third is, you noted in your testimony that you wouldn't go back to the same model. I imagine there are a range of options under consideration, whether or not to go to dry storage, whether to increase the strength of the dikes, et cetera. Could you just kind of outline for us the 5 or 6 strategies that might be the ones you're looking at?
Yes, I'll do that. First of all, we built one weir downstream to keep the ash from migrating downstream. There's actually a narrow spot in the river just below where all this spill occurred. It's about 615 feet wide. We built a weir, which means we built gravel riprap out about a third of the way in the river, then left a notch for the river to flow on by so it doesn't back up and flood the residents. That should collect most of the ash that comes downstream if it moves. Second, we've gone upstream on our property at the edge of it and asked for permission to build a second weir up there to contain about 50% more behind that so it can't get out to the river. So there's about 3 options here. One, we can dredge the river, put it behind that second weir, and then proceed to dry it. 2, we could use this fabric we talked about, dredge the river, and put it in this fabric and stack those fabrics. They come in long tubes, about 20 yards long, I'm told. I don't have the specifics on that. You can actually stack them, and we could put them in another place on site. That is a good stout containment. We've tried that. It seems to work well in terms of letting the water out, keeping all the solids in. That's a second option. A third option would be to use, when we dredge this, is actually to put it on a barge and barge it to another site that is permitted and properly dispose of that ash at another site. And of course, we've got rail on site. We could, in addition to using barge, we could try to use the rail. I think the barge, the fabric drying, and the normal dewatering of putting it back in a drier place and then letting it dry is the 3 options that seem to be most promising right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, sir. Senator Isaacson? I mean, Senator Alexander, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Kilgore, thank you for being here. In an earlier meeting we had with the TVA Congressional Caucus, I asked you these questions, but I'd like to do it again in public. In my meeting with the residents who are here, they wanted to make sure, one, that TVA would have a long-term interest in cleaning up this problem. 2, that TVA might consider giving them options to move from the land that's affected and to move back if after they see what you've done, they like what you've done. And 3, that there be some sort of independent verification of what you've done from a health and an environmental standard. Are those 3 areas that you're willing to make happen?
Yes, sir. And if I could elaborate, we do want to, where we need to purchase property that has been damaged, if people do want to reserve the option to come back, we're very willing to do that. If people, you know, don't think they want to come back, we'd like to purchase that property and so that we can move on with the cleanup. We're very willing to do that and give them the option. And we're also not only willing, but interested in independent verification. We need the EPA and the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation. They're the ones that have credibility right now, more than we do. We need them to stay there with the water samples and the sampling that needs to be done in the environment.
Now, in the spirit of turning this from an environmental disaster into a long-term technological opportunity, I want to ask you, if, unless it's proprietary information, relatively what the cost is of producing electricity in the Tennessee Valley, for example, and any way you want to define it. I mean, per kilowatt hour, what does it cost to produce coal?
A kilowatt hour of coal, if you just talk about the electricity out of the coal, not the transmission and other things, it'll be about 4.5 to 5 cents.
Does that include the cost of building the coal plant?
Yeah.
Is that what you call an all-in cost?
That's an all-in cost. That is for older equipment. So mm-hmm. if we built new plants, obviously that would be higher.
And for nuclear?
And for nuclear, the nuclear plant we're building right now is about 4.2 cents, as I recall, Senator.
And for natural gas?
Natural gas would be, the fuel alone for natural gas would cost about 6 cents, so about 8 cents to 10 cents.
And hydro is?
Hydro is a few dollars, you know, in terms of the, that would be less than a cent.
And solar you don't have?
Solar we have very little of. We buy that from other folks.
And wind?
Wind is about 70 cents.
70
cents, yes.
70 cents. Now, looking ahead, and I say this to the Madam Chairman, I'm very excited about President-elect Obama's emphasis on electric cars and trucks. And one reason I am is because, according to Brookings and others who've looked at it, we don't have to build any power plants to use them. That if we plug them in at night into our existing power plants, and you've testified this yourself, and you're working with Nissan in Tennessee as a example of your looking ahead. The plants that you have, whether they're coal or hydro or nuclear at night, will have cheaper power that will be available to nuclear, that they'll be available to electric cars and trucks, and the estimates are that we might be able to electrify as much as half our fleet over the next 20 years and thereby reduce our dependence on foreign oil. Now, in order to do that, since nationally 50% of our electricity is made by coal, we're going to have to clean up the coal. And those who argue for the electric cars point out that even if we don't clean it up, that the carbon footprint of an electric car is less than an internal combustion car. But I feel like that what we need to do is help you and other utilities take the coal plants that are going to continue to exist in this country and clean them up. I mean, go ahead and put scrubbers on all of them. Make the mercury limit 90%. Deal with this coal ash problem that we're talking about today and have some sort of mini Manhattan Project to find some way to recapture the carbon that comes from there, which commercially isn't available today. Would you have any advice for us? Is there any one or two things that we could do to make it easier for you to operate clean coal plants in the next 10 to 20 years, period?
Well, that's a heavy question in terms of everything else I've been thinking about, Senator, is focused on this recovery.
But the recovery brings to question the true cost of using coal to make electricity.
Right. There are several technologies that the Electric Power Research Institute is looking at in terms of being able to use coal in the future, everything from coal gasification first, which cleans up the stream before it's used, to several other technologies. One doesn't come to mind now, but there are about three technologies that's used there. And we do need to find a way. I mean, there's coal to liquids, coal to gas, then there's cleaning up, scrubbing the existing facilities that could all be used as we go forward.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
I want to pick up on this attitude of the TVA because you're a very nice man and you've been very agreeable. And I so associate myself with the remarks of Senator Alexander. But isn't it true that you fought very hard against the EPA? They said you had 50 violations of the New Source Review, and weren't you even involved in the case in saying you didn't want to be told that you had to clean up the air, that you needed these new scrubbers? Didn't you fight against that legally?
I don't know, Madam Chairwoman.
You don't know?
I've been there a short period of time.
Okay. Well, our staff says that
Could I reply to you in writing, please?
Please. Yes. But I think what you'll find is that your legal department entered that case. Am I correct on that? And fought against having to clean up your act. Now, I just think, you know, I like your answer to Senator Alexander, but I hope you'll go back and show me this, because in the past, very recent past, and this new source review finally has gotten resolved. And as I understand it, the state of North Carolina has sued TVA for polluting. So you've got problems, and you are a nice man, and I, you know, have a sense that maybe you didn't know all of this.
I will
but
give you a reply to this.
But you've got big problems, you know, and I get back to what Senator Carper said. We want to work with you, but you've got to clean up your act there, literally. Now, Mr. Kilgore, the Kingston plan has released, and I think we have a chart on this, 518,000 pounds of arsenic. Here it shows 278,000. So we'll go with this. 278,000 pounds of arsenic, 259,000 pounds of lead, 1,185,000 pounds of mercury, and 40,800 pounds of selenium, for a total of 580,213 pounds of heavy toxic metals released. Now, selenium causes wildlife deformities. I know that from my state. We had a horse show going on with too much selenium in our environment. And ash waste is now spread throughout the valley. I mean, can you hold that up again, that sort of mud? No, not that one. Sorry. The one that shows sort of like a mudslide. I mean, that graphically shows what's going on. And Senator Carper, if you turn around, you could see this. The mud, I mean, that which is this right here, spreading there. And this isn't harmless. This has all this in it. Now, you said, in answer to one of the questions, you're going to clean this up. You're going to get this stuff, and you're going to put it back on your property. Then you're going to figure out, you're going to sell it, you're going to do this. What about the coves? What I understand from the homeowners, and I don't know if we have the picture of the coves. We have a small picture that they showed me where they would just, why they bought their property, these little coves all around. They say you have no plans to get, that they know of, to restore the water there. They say you're just going to cover it up and plant it up. So people who had, you know, water outside their house now have this gunk there that has seeds put in it, grass growing up. Is that what your plan is? Is that what you consider a cleanup for those homeowners?
There are two coves, and, well, I'll just answer you bluntly. No, that's not a cleanup. If that's there are two coves. One of them had deeper water than the other one. The other is more to the northwest, if you will. And I was asked specifically at a town meeting, are you going to make that back into an embayment? In other words, have water back there. And I said, until we can study that and make sure we're working with the state to permit that correctly, I can't answer that directly at this time. It could be that a creek through that area would stir up less, and that we could cap that and shake that. We want to recover all that we can recover. The likelihood is that we'll take this and store it some way and dewater it. I didn't want to make a promise on that particular one until I know what the best options are for the environment and for the neighbors.
But at this time, you have no plans on the books to restore those coves the way they were before, is my point.
But I also don't have plans not to, Madam Chair.
Well, that's not an answer.
Okay.
You need to have a plan to clean this up. And if you don't have, you don't have a plan now. That's my point. You don't, that's not cleanup, just leaving the stuff there. In my opinion, it's not cleanup, because people will never feel safe there. They know what's in this. They're very smart. And they know what's in it. And it's sitting out there, and they're going to send their grandkids out or their kids out to play? I don't think so. I don't think you'd send your grandkid out to play in an area like that. Now, I want to make the point that you said that you looked at the studies prior to the failure, and they all look good. Well, One engineer who reviewed TVA's February 08 annual Ashpond Dike Stability Inspection Report questioned your evaluation. His name is Bruce Schatz, a dam safety consultant who was the first U.S. Chief of Federal Dam Safety for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. He said he was perplexed that you felt it was safe. He said it contained information about seeps, erosion, and other issues, but no information to back up the claim that the dike was indeed stable. So I think there's just a lot of questions surrounding your decision-making prior to the failure. And I have to say, from everything I read, I believe the decision was made to go with the cheapest fix. That is a very bad thing. It is a bad thing to do. It's just like if you have a problem with the roof in your house and you take the cheapest solution, which is put a little patch over there, but you ignore the fact that there were some cracks that seemed to be in the roof that were spreading, and then one day, you know, you have a massive flood. You know, this isn't your house. I don't mean you personally, sir. You're a nice man. But this isn't TVA's house. You know, this isn't. And just like this isn't our government, the senators here, we govern for the people. You have people who trust in you, in your management. Again, I say you, I mean your organization. They live, they're neighbors. I know that the entire area, because we spent a lot of time talking about it, TVA is this area. You know, this TVA is the community. So you can't treat people and their investments, their homes, and their families as if they're just, you know, neighbors to you in by proximity. And it goes back to Senator Carper's quote. You know, when you're a neighbor, you have to be concerned about this. Now, if you were told you had a problem, you chose the cheapest fix, that turned out to be wrong. You didn't pick the right fix, and now you have the most expensive problem on your hands in this horrific thing, 1 billion gallons of toxic waste. There's a lot of blame to go around, sir. I myself share it because of my lack of focus on this. But when the EPA confirmation comes about, I want to just say to my colleagues, I intend to ask Lisa Jackson what she intends to do, because the EPA doesn't even need any legislation from us colleagues. They have the ability to regulate this. And I see it coming, and I hope it's coming. And the technologies are already there, Senator Alexander. They really are. We can do for safer disposal. The dry ash is way safer than the wet. And all you have to do is look and see. Way safer than the wet. So that right away is available. But we could go to the lined alternative. We can, you know, line these fills and so on and so forth. So I have other questions I'll submit for the record, because we want to get to our next panel. I won't ask you any more questions. I'm sure you'll be delighted to know that. But I'm going to call on other colleagues to take their round now. Senator Carper.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair. I see in the audience when we recognized your neighbors, our neighbors from Roane County, and looking at the folks who are sitting on the front row, I look all the way down to my right to your left, and there's Senator Alexander, I'd say there's a member of the audience that looks familiar to me, and perhaps to you. I think she maybe at one time was Secretary of the Senate. Is that Emily Reynolds that I see sitting out there? And Jeff Merkley, our new senator from Oregon, and Tom Udall, our new senator from New Mexico, were participants in the orientation for new senators and spouses last month. And that's an initiative that Senator Alexander and Senator Voinovich and I and others worked on with great support from Emily Reynolds. And just want you to know that experiment that we kicked off 4 or 5 years ago is alive and well, and I think bearing good fruit, bringing along a new generation of senators, and I think they'll be well served in our country, and their states will be well served because of it. So welcome. Let me just observe, Mr. Kilgore, I've served with Barbara Boxer. We were elected to the House together in 82, and I've been in a number of committee hearings with her then, and now I've never heard her say to one witness 3 times that you're a nice person. And so, you know, I know you're carrying some heavy burdens as you and your responsibilities, but you can feel better about that. That's pretty unusual. But when I was a younger man, I used to study a little bit of economics, not nearly enough, but I studied some economics, and I always said in my work here, I always look for market solutions to help us incentivize a good public policy. And I want to have one question that relates to fly ash, and then look to some broader environmental issues I want to talk to you about. But when you think of best practices, let's just think about best practices in the industry for dealing with fly ash. We create a lot of coal. I was born in West Virginia. My dad was a coal miner for a short time in his life, so we have sort of a family history with coal. And I know it's we're going to be using coal for a long time. But we've got to find ways to, as you know, reduce the emissions from the coal. But just talk to us about a little bit about best practices within the industry for dealing with fly ash that comes from using coal. What are some things that you're doing that you think are cutting edge, and what are some things that others are doing, other utilities are doing that are cutting edge that we could all learn from?
Well, I think the two obvious ones are to use the dry ash method of collecting it. That way it is more marketable, if it is, and it also keeps the water out. So those are the two things. If you can market the fly ash, obviously that puts it back in a more natural state, out in a cementitious mixture of some sort, either a roadbed or lightweight concrete or something like that. So the best thing you can do with this fly ash is find ways to reuse it, much as we're trying to do with a lot of other things in our environment, is to recycle as opposed to just hold on to it. And that's, I think, where we need to concentrate.
Is there anything that, that the state or federal government should be doing to incentivize that best practice, or is nothing needed?
Not that I can readily think of. I'm sure I can if I've got a little time, but okay. At the moment I don't think of anything.
Fair enough. Let me just pivot, if I could, and move toward, I guess what I'll call just a cleaner TVA, some questions relating to a cleaner TVA. And there's a couple of areas I'd like to explore with you. And one of those is, can you share with us some of the investments that you're making at TVA with respect to reducing mercury emissions and to carbon capture technologies?
On the mercury emissions, we have 7 scrubbers in operation. We're installing a 4th and 5th one now on this Kingston plant. 4th and 5th, 8th and 9th, and then we also have one at Bull Run. So we'll have 9-10 scrubbers in operation in the next couple of years. That is the most of our coal generation that captures, as you know, the mercury is a co-benefit of that scrubbing. You capture the mercury out of that.
But roughly how much do you think you're capturing or reducing mercury emissions by through that approach?
I'm sorry?
Roughly how what percentage of your mercury emissions do you think you're capturing with that approach as a co-benefit?
The co-benefits, I think, and I'll need to go back and check on this, I think are about 90%, and it gets the mercury below detectable limits as it goes out. Obviously, there might still be some there, but it's below those detectable limits.
That's pretty encouraging. All right. Talk to us about what you're doing with respect to carbon capture.
Carbon capture, we're
or other initiatives. Other initiatives, right, relating to not just sequestration, but right, but other things that you're doing with carbon or thinking about doing with carbon.
Yes. Let me take that question because that's the one that I can answer best. The carbon capture is obviously going to be a very expensive proposition, and then you have what are you going to do with the carbon after you've captured it. Sequestration could be problematic. Who owns the space under the ground? How do you do that? So we're following the Electric Power Research Institute, participating in that on that score. Meanwhile, we still need to minimize our carbon. So our strategy there is twofold. We have a good strategic plan that our new board guided us through, and it's anchored on two things. One, increase our nuclear generation because it is carbon-free. It's also sulfur-free and nitrogen-free. So it captures all three of those, and it doesn't have those. And then also on the efficiency. We think there's a lot of room to be gained in our energy efficiency and conservation program. Senator Alexander mentioned the cars. You know, to be able to fuel cars at night on electricity and then run them during the day, utilizes the system better, it spreads the fixed cost of our system better, but even other things, just like how we heat and cool our houses and all that. So we're engaged in a program. We have about $100 million budgeted this year, and that increases every year for the next 5 years to just look at our energy efficiency. And we
give us some examples of how that $100 million is going to be spent.
Well,
we had yesterday a guy sitting right in your seat yesterday, John Doerr from California, talk with us about how they've incentivized utilities in California to be able to make money, but make money by selling actually less electricity. And
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about some of the very things we're talking about. But how are you going to use some of that $100 million?
Let me give you the most practical example. We work with Oak Ridge National Labs to build 5 Habitat for Humanity houses that are all about 1,200 square feet. And the last one of those houses we built is an all-electric house, 1,200 square feet, and the electricity cost for that house is less than $1 a day. And it's that way because all of the facilities, the heating and cooling, are all engineered. You don't put the heat ducts or the cooling ducts in the attic where it is the hottest or coldest, so you lose all the heat. You put them down in heated space. We have a microcomputer that tells the air conditioner when it's running, put the heat from the air conditioner back in the hot water. Don't put it out to the air where, as you and I might go out beside our air conditioner and hold our hand over, you feel all that hot air. Put that heat back in the hot water. That basically gives you hot water free all summer. And so, yes, we sell less electricity that way, but on the balance of that, that's really good because it evens out our system and doesn't expose us to these high peaks. What cost us a lot of money to serve our customers are having to bill for high peaks and then having no sales at off-peak times. If we can levelize that, then we can give the economic benefit to our customers. So that's why conservation and energy efficiency is good for all of us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Senator Carper, thank you. I think I don't want to get off of this spill today, but this is important because these are the kinds of other issues we're going to get into. I would like to move on, if it's okay with colleagues, to our next panel. And again, in parting, I would say, Mr. Kilgore, remember your mission. Being a national leader in technological innovation, low-cost power, and environmental stewardship. It doesn't say one or the other, all of these things. And I would just say, from what I know about you, TVA, you're lagging in some of these areas. And so we're going to need to work very closely with you, and I'm glad that you reached your hand out. But all of us feel these people have to be made whole. They need a remedy that's a real remedy, not some cover up the problem remedy, and we need to see you, speaking for myself, not fighting cleaner technologies, not utilizing a budget that you get from ratepayers to fight against ways to clean up their air, but to be on the right side of those issues, and we hope to see this agency transformed into a leader, and I think we do have the interest and the right frame of mind to make that happen. So we'll see you again, hopefully in better circumstances than this one.